Hey, how's it going, everybody, and welcome back to the Paradigm Project. Today we're going to be discussing our relaunch of the Paradigm Project. We will be engaging in a new, even better, more beautiful conversation, and that all begins today. I am joined by my co-hosts, Michael Clark and Winter Varner, as well as our tech producer, Jacob Payne, and the lovely Maltese mentor, Keith DeMono.
How many nationalities have been used to describe me at Paradigm, do you think?
Well, how many do you have?
Like three, but like people...
I've just alternated between the three.
Well, the thing is, like, people will like talk about me when they don't know who I am. They're like, that Australian mentor. And I'm like, how do you know my place of origin without knowing
your accent?
Maltese mentor is alliterative, so I thought I'd use it.
DeBono? Maltese mentor is alliterative, you're right.
DeBono? You just look like you wrestle kangaroos to the ground on like a regular basis.
Rose eating spider sandwiches.
I feel like
sandwiches.
I'm trying to make this a point. You talk.
Yeah, I do talk.
Loud.
Yeah, that is true.
We can hear your accent, buddy.
Yikes. All right, I feel called out. Let's get into it. So guys, the podcast is changing. Those of you who don't know and can't see because this is not a visual medium, we are now chilling on some couches in my classroom. Don't come at us. They are very comfortable, and we're trying to, like, you know, bleed some of that comfort into the podcast. We're going to decrease the formality a little bit and see where it takes us. So, talking about this great conversation, this new conversation that we're in, one of the things that has always struck me about the books we read here at Paradigm is just how many of them inspire me to go and talk to someone. Like, literally, I'll read a book, and I just can't keep it to myself. Yeah, Michael, you have one of the books I'm talking about right now. Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Author of that is...
Robert M. Persig.
Yes. I read that book, I think, like 2 years ago.
What do you think the M stands for?
I don't know, but mind-blowing.
Motorcycles.
Motorcycles. Mind-blowing, whatever his last name is.
I love the idea that his middle name is motorcycle.
But it literally changed the way I think about education, about what is quality, and the way we assess and attribute value and goodness to things, and inspired me to go and have conversations about it. You know, what does he talk about? What does he call it? It's like a Native American term or something.
Oh, man. Reading it is way different than pronouncing it, but it's like Chautauqua or something.
Yes. Yes. Which basically just means like a radio show where you talk about a topic just nonstop, which is essentially this radio show.
Plus it's a podcast.
Yeah, right? It's a podcast.
Yeah.
But it's a podcast about an idea. And so his idea is about quality. And that was part of what got me thinking about this relaunch, because we're trying to change the quality of the podcast, change some of the actual qualities, right? Mm-hmm. So the quality and the qualities are being changed. Mm-hmm. And you all look at me like I'm crazy right now.
I get it.
But yeah, like
I'm reading the book.
You're welcome.
Yeah, reading the book. What do you think so far?
I think it's really good. I mean, you just by saying what you've just said, I'm already like connecting it to the book a bunch. I almost see it in the book. Persig divides the world into a spectrum of classical versus romantic understanding.
Just for clarification, is it Persig or Persing?
Persig. And these two different understandings sometimes compete with each other, and he's looking for like a middle ground. I see this as kind of moving more towards that middle ground. To provide a little bit of background, the classical is very focused on like reason and logical deduction and things like that. And the romantic understanding is more based on art and beauty and things like that. And I see this almost as, not that it wasn't beautiful before, but it was definitely heavy. We focused on a lot of heavy source material. We talked about a lot of heavy things. And now we're just trying to discuss those things, but use it to appreciate the beauty of life.
So talking about the great conversation and the beauty of the great conversation, and specifically, I think beauty is one of the topics that you can talk about as part of the conversation, because so much of what we experience and so much of what the choices we make and the things that we do are based on seeking goodness, seeking beauty in some way, right? So how do you guys do that? What's your thing? How do you seek beauty in your life?
I for one, you reminded me a lot of my thesis when you said that. It concerns the mediums that the great conversation can take. I'm a musician, and music is something that I love. Sometimes I think that the great conversation is restricted to books in our minds. But I think that music and visual art and mediums such as that are ways where the great conversation can still take place, just in a different way.
Right, okay. What about you guys?
I think that
Usually we restrict the great conversation. Like Michael said, we restrict it to books, but I think that we also just restrict it to the arts. And I personally have found a lot of beauty in things outside of the arts. Like, I love photography, I love poetry, a lot of artistic mediums, but I think that something that really inspires me in a way that nothing else does is just science, pure science, and the fact that so many people come together and make these observations and just cultivate understanding, and that it makes such an amazing community where other people can learn and become a part of it, and that anybody can be a part of it. It's amazing to me.
Cool.
I think the number one way is, so we're talking about like how we seek beauty, right?
Yeah, right. Because what we're talking about today in general is how do we experience the great conversation of ideas, right? So what do we do that gets us that experience? And so one of the things we're talking about is identifying and qualifying beauty. And to me, that's one of the primary topics of the Great Conversation of Ideas. That's what we're seeking is, I guess, goodness would be another way to put it. So to make it Aristotelian, right? The chief good being happiness. We're seeking happiness. So you seek happiness through art and music or through science or whatever. So I guess I'm curious to know, like, as our hosts and other people involved in the podcast, like Jake and myself.
Host and Jake.
How do we seek happiness? How do we engage in this great conversation of ideas?
We go gym. That's all. I'm done.
Why do you become this person?
On to Jacob. Jacob, how do you seek happiness and see the beauty in this world?
I mean, it all comes down to, what is beauty? What is the definition of beauty? My freshman year, I took a class from our great mentors, Miss Maurer, and she taught us that, like, everything can be beautiful. Like, most women are called, look so beautiful, like, women are beautiful. Men can also be beautiful as well. So I found that interesting. Everything is beautiful in its own way. I really don't care what anything looks like. Everything is beautiful to me. Everything.
If I can say something real quick. I think the liberal arts our way of viewing the world in a very comprehensive way, a way that connects so many different fields of study or mediums of art into one cohesive view of the world and just how beautiful it can be.
It's interesting you say that, because so Mortimer Adler, right, one of the people that curated the great works, right, the great books, and in that curation, he wrote like a preface to the great works and talked about the purpose of liberal art. And that's what I want to focus on. Not so much the man himself or his seven habits or whatever, but in the preface to the Great Conversation of Ideas, it talks about the reason the liberal arts is so significant. And it's really talking about teaching the liberal arts to adults. But essentially, it goes through how like standardized education fails people, right? So like,
true.
You teach someone, this is the way to do a thing. This is what you should be thinking. This is what you should be doing. And that's all you teach. Then you have this shortfall, right? But he specifically focuses on this hyper-specialization that the world of education has sort of geared people towards, especially in America, right? So in America, we have a hyper-specialized approach to education and to labor, right? And then we have these generals that you guys do, the associate's degree in college, which almost flies in the face of specializing, right? The idea being, we want you to study lots of things and then specialize. And what Adler says in the preface basically is that that's where we fail, when we decide to and then specialize to the exclusion of all other fields of academics. And that is what the liberal arts is. And we get so hung up on like, is the liberal arts classics? Is the liberal arts, leftist education? No, it's none of those things. The liberal arts is the liberal application of knowledge, right? It is the seeking for knowledge in multiple spheres. It's the idea that Dante Alighieri was a poet who also was obsessed with mathematics, right? And Pythagoras was a mathematician who wrote beautifully, who studied people and morality and all these kind of stuff. And so some of our best academics have been men and women who have broadened their educational horizons, right? And they connect art and the music and the science and the math and the English and all the different topics together so that they're not a specialist of any one field of academics. They're a specialist in the seeking of knowledge, right? And that's the liberal arts. And to me, that's the great conversation. The great conversation is a conversation that transcends disciplines, that is inspired by great works, and great ideas.
Can I read a quote real fast?
Yeah.
So, I'm reading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, right? So earlier today, I was reading and I found a passage that really struck me. It's written in a stream of consciousness way. So this is the protagonist just thinking his mind. And he says, "It's a problem of our time. The range of human knowledge today is so great that we're all specialists. And the distance between specializations has become so great that anyone who seeks to wander freely among them almost has to forgo closeness with the people around him." And I think that's saying that our specialization does not only prevent us from bridging the gaps between these kinds of knowledge, it almost prevents us from connecting with people as well as we possibly can.
Specialization doesn't just stop you from bridging the gaps. It creates the gaps in the first place, right? If I'm an engineer, I, in my mind, think I have nothing in common with a musician. And yet, there's mathematics that connects us, right? There's measures and beats and counts, and there's angles and geometry, and there's, you know, conversions and calculations. So we're actually connected in ways that we aren't even looking at because we assume our specializations separate us, right? I look at the science fiction author as the liberal arts person, right? Because the science fiction author has to know how to write well, has to know how to research, but also knows some like basic truths about science. I mean, some of them.
Depends.
Yeah,
depends.
The accurate ones.
Science fiction with a capital fiction.
I think specialization is part of what creates the divide between people. And then the great conversation of ideas, the purpose of it is to overcome that divide.
I love that you bring up science fiction writers because it makes me think of, it's interesting how people can like add and take away from the great conversation. It's kind of like a willing thing. And speaking of a science fiction author, L. Ron Hubbard is a scoundrel. And I just wanted to say that.
Just calling out L. Ron Hubbard without giving us any context. Who is this man?
L. Ron Hubbard.
What did he write?
He is the founder of Scientology.
Okay. See, now I feel less bad about you calling somebody out on the podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what makes him so interesting is that he founded a religion, but he is a science fiction author. So I don't know why anybody thought that anything he was saying is true because he writes fiction for a living. And then the other thing is that all of the doctrine for his religion is completely ridiculous and laughable. He was like, oh, you want to know why people feel sad? You do, don't you? You want to know why you feel sad and depressed sometimes?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Well, I'll tell you right now. It's because the Lord Xenu, a great outer space alien, this is true, he flew across the galaxy with a bunch of slaves, other aliens, and he threw them into Hawaii's volcanoes, and then as they died, he caught the alien souls in a little trap and then took them to a soul brainwashing facility and brainwashed them and then set them free on Earth to make people sad.
Dang.
Now, see, okay, I am a huge fan of authors like say, Milton, right, Paradise Lost, and Dante Alighieri from Dante's Inferno. But that sounds remarkably similar to the Battle of Heaven and demons being cast onto the earth. And is that just me?
No, you're right.
You know what I mean? Like, and their job is to make us all feel sad. Like, I feel like we're all looking for something.
So
we're looking for an explanation.
Like, you know what was a lot less ridiculous? The idea that there was a force in heaven opposing God rather than an evil alien flew across the galaxy in golden Boeing 747s to drop off a load of aliens.
Okay. Let's not get caught up in the weeds.
I'm confused.
My point isn't the reliability of Scientology. That is never my point, ever. Assume it's not. My point is that even what Elon Hubbard, you said his name was?
L. Ron Hubbard.
Even what L. Ron Hubbard is trying to do.
You know, he was quoted as saying, you want to know how to make the real money? You got to make your own religion.
Okay, I mean, there's obviously more motives than the one I'm going to talk about right now, but there is motivation there to me that speaks of a desire to know something unknowable, right?
I don't know if that's what he was going for.
Look, let's move on from L. Ron Hubbard and let's talk about humanity as a whole and the reason for the Great Conversation, right? I think, you know, you talk about like the Great Conversation is so often consumed with philosophy, right? These ideas of love and faith and God and the divine and the search for meaning. And it speaks of people who are curious. You know, and I think we have been trying to talk out answers in a tiny little room you know, crammed four people in this tiny little space.
Sometimes five.
Sometimes five. And that's part of the part of the problem is that it's so hard to think in that tiny space.
Because you're baking, because it's closed and it's tiny.
Yeah.
It's 185 degrees Celsius in there.
That is not true.
So dead. Like, so dead.
I was.
Okay. But one thing that I want us to get into the habit of, instead of trying to answer questions that nobody asked.
Yes.
Can we start trying to, you know, find answers to our own questions and also inspire people to come up with questions themselves, right? Like, I would challenge our readers right now, what are your questions?
Our readers?
Yeah, for
readers?
All of our readers out there.
Okay, you know, you could transcribe a podcast. Yeah. I would challenge all of our listeners right now.
Call me the author.
You know, both of you, to really think about, you know, what are your questions? What are you thinking about? What are you wondering about? And then go have those conversations. Like, that is what the Great Conversation of Ideas is about. Right? The Great Conversation of Ideas is people walking up to other people and being like, I don't know this. Do you know some of this? Can you give me some of this answer? And like, that's what we're doing. So, you know, what are your questions?
So we're becoming Spark Notes, the podcast?
No, we're asking questions, not giving answers.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, we don't have any more answers than anybody else does.
Mm-mm.
Like, for the most part, you are teenagers and one adult man.
For the most part, I agree.
Like, trying to, like, answer questions to the universe.
Sometimes. You know what,
Oliver, you're killing me, bro.
Sometimes Oliver's 70.
Where would I be? I'm going to put you on the floor.
No, he's at the ottoman.
Go on.
I mean, we could explore like some of our interests. Like, I love video games. Oh, wow, a boy loves video games.
That's
a changer.
Nuts, dude.
I know, right?
That's insane.
No, but like, I don't actually enjoy playing video games that much. I enjoy like the aspect of them. Like, they're basically stories if they have a story, and a bunch of code mixed together to create something that everyone can play or not play.
True, dude. The best video games are an absolute art form. To get it to be done right, you need so many different people coming together, working on so many different aspects that only to fit into each other and click to synthesize this one consistent feeling. I played through Red Dead 2 recently, and that game is fantastic. So not only is the writing for the story beautiful, and the voice acting, the performances for that absolutely knocked it out of the park, but you also have all of the less creative and more technical aspects of it, like the actual gameplay design, you know, programming, you know, modeling, coming up with this map and this whole world. And the sound design for that game actually makes my knees wobble and my head light, because the sound design, I played through it wearing my editing headphones, so I really could hear all the sounds, and every single thing that happens in that game around you is making its own sound, and it sounds incredible. And to be able to work on that degree of synthesis and be able to like all create something together that works that well is astounding.
So this is a great example of like liberal arts people in the world, right? Because the sound designers, they're working on sounds. Yeah, like they're literally...
Like birds and stuff.
Yeah, like they're literally birds, creating horses. Or finding sounds, recording sounds.
Trains.
And then they're adding those sounds to a game, right?
Yeah.
But they're adding those sounds to a story. And the storytellers are assuming those sounds exist when they create their story. And the modelers, the people who are designing the characters, are basing that design off sketches of people who have been, you know, integrally involved with the story design. So like, there's so many different people in so many different fields.
That bounce off each other.
That bounce off each other, whether that's a video game or a film or whatever. Those people, think about indie game studios, right? That, where there's like 10 people who do all that stuff.
Sometimes one person.
Stardew Valley was one guy, and that game's like extensive.
Oh, I love Stardew Valley.
And you think about it and you go, okay, yeah, that's great. It's like one guy. But that one guy had to do all the technical and all the creative pieces.
And the sound and the story.
Like, you told me there's no story in Stardew Valley. Like, how many relationships can you get into in that game?
Not really a story.
28.
There's
232.
There you go. There are so many little stories happening in Stardew Valley.
I'm going to say something that's going to be bold. It's going to be controversial. It might shake the very ground that
it
we stand on.
It probably won't make it into the podcast.
Does it have to do with Ronnie Coleman?
Arthur Morgan is the best fictional character ever written.
Debatable. Ooh. You can't say best because nothing is the best.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Anyways.
Okay. And I did.
So, well,
okay. We're going to have a discussion on the quality
on the
best
video games
now.
Thing, I actually am interested in talking about something similar, but I really want to go into imitating reality and trying to capture reality.
Like AI and technical stuff?
Kind of. Like, I want to talk about VR and how you try to make it feel like you're living through the experience of the game, or pictures and videos, and how you can't live through a moment because they are real things, but they're not the real experience.
Ready Player One is a good example of that. The book is amazing.
Yeah. What is truth?
I mean, that comes down to this whole thing of like,
what is truth?
Eventually, right? Like, you think about the way that we're expanding our ability to imitate reality.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we're going to get as close to perfect as we're ever going to get.
And then why not just experience reality?
Let's be honest. We're all living in a simulation right now, right?
True.
If humanity is going to build like a simulation, like a perfect simulation at some point, then we're already
in. Here's my question.
It.
If humanity was to build a simulation, why is it so boring and lame all the time?
Well,
but according to the Matrix, because we wouldn't believe it if it was perfect.
I mean, if there were a perfect simulation, that would just be reality. They are the same thing.
Exactly.
So then why do we keep trying? Let's just not simulate reality because we're just going to end up overlapping.
Let's just turn the op line off.
But
anyway, I don't want to get too much into the weeds of each of these individual questions because they deserve their own episode. I would love an episode about like the realness of reality and how simulating that is its own exercise in futility. But what other things have inspired you guys? What other episodes would you want to do?
Louis L'Amour's book, The Lonesome Gods.
I love that.
That's
book.
A good book.
Probably my favorite book ever. That it's book's incredible.
Another banger from Louis L'Amour.
Another good book is The Alchemist. I really like that book because
I hate The Alchemist.
Why hate The Alchemist?
The Alchemist sucks.
Why?
It is a bad book.
Why?
We'll have an episode on
See,
it.
See, exactly. Okay.
I'll just talk about how much
questions.
I hate it.
I didn't
Fine.
Read it.
We'll explain.
Because like, it was a certain someone's class, and I was pointing through the wall, not directly to my right. And it was, I hated that class and vice versa the book. I'm sure it's a great book.
I actually inspired me to write a different writing thing. So, like, I like writing stories in my brain, like maybe write on paper, but I like the anonymous, what's it called? Kind of like, I don't know.
The personal legend idea?
But also like the way he wrote the book where you hear the main character's name like once, the whole book, and the rest of the book is just the boy or he. And that inspires me to write books where there's no named characters and you have to guess and imagine your own reality of like what they're doing, what their name is, how they look like, which are basically books themselves, imagination on paper.
Interesting.
Speaking of so many books, a concept that I'd love to explore is that of the personal canon. We talk about like the great canon of the canon of like Western civilization or the canon of Eastern civilization or like different things like this.
What's true?
No, he's talking about what? National books. Like, like for a long time, the Bible was one of the America's national books, right? So a national book is like a book that is part of a place's identity, right? So the Western canon, that is the great books of the Western world. That's what that is.
Okay.
It's like it's a collection of all of the books that make up Western thinking. Right? But an individual can have their own personal canon. It's like for me, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, Anatomy of Peace, The Alchemist, Man's Search for Meaning, all of these books that I've read since coming to Paradigm have become part of my personal canon, right? They're part of the things that make up who I am.
Right. I think that's something that I'm trying to explore. I mean, I'm only 18, like I'm still learning and growing. I'm relatively young. And so I'm reading all of these books and I'm meeting these new ideas and they're becoming integrated into myself. I'd even go so far as to say that the day I stop reading will be the day I die intellectually.
No, don't die intellectually, Michael. Please.
I feel like the day that I stop reading will be the day I actually die. So far we've talked about these ideas we want to discuss further, right? What this is the real question for me. Why? Why is Jake interested in the idea of stories? Why is Michael interested in the idea of a personal canon? Why is Winter interested in the idea of a simulated reality and what that means? Why is Oliver interested in video games and Ronnie Coleman? What is it about the things that we love that
He's
make us love
fantastic.
Them? What is it about those things that make us need to converse about them?
If liberal arts are to be believed, then all of it's connected, even though some of these concepts might seem remote. And so as we discuss all of them separately, we're all getting at the core of humanity. We're getting at all the things that connect us. Like, I don't consider myself to necessarily be a science buff. I know Winter is a big science fan, but I know
definitely
that in spite of the fact that I might not identify with that, there is a lot in the discipline of science that I would appreciate just by virtue of the fact that, like, I appreciate beauty and I'm human. And I like, there are all these different fields of study that I might not know a lot about that I could explore and find out more about what it means to be human.
Also depends on where you grew up around. I mean, I grew up around reading stories about, you know, animals and, like, all this, you know.
No, but that's not what I'm talking about. But I'm not talking about, like, why do you like stories? I'm talking about, why is it that when we get something that we love or we're excited about, we feel the need to converse about it?
Yeah.
Because, right? Like, we love it?
But why does that mean I want to talk about it?
Like, I have too many ideas to keep in this overly large head of mine. And that's saying something about the quantity of ideas. Because I imagine that a dome of this size could hold quite a few. And, you know, it's like sometimes you need to share your accomplishments and your discoveries with other people.
Why?
Because if I keep it to myself, then why the hell did I accomplish anything in the first place?
That's what I was about to say. Like, if we don't share them, how much worth do they actually have?
Right. So, okay. So then what you guys are saying is that things are only valid if they're talked about.
That's not what I said. I said things are only important to me if other people
know.
Yes, in a
way.
So I think that could be worth a whole series of podcast episodes.
How many episodes do you think we're able to make? You're like, I think we should do like 50 on that one.
Good.
No, but I think it would go past that, honestly.
That's the question. Like, the things that we should talk about on this new conversation, or whatever you want to call it, right, are the things that we cannot help but talk about. The things that we find so interesting and so fascinating that someone has to stop us from talking about it. Like, because those are the things that are part of the great conversation of ideas. And we keep trying to go back to the great books and being like, what are the lofty things that have been talked about before? And that's really great. And there's a lot of really worthwhile things in there. But I really want us to try and ask the questions, what do I need to talk about this week? What do I need to talk about? If Michael came up to me today, tomorrow, and said, I need to talk about quality with you, I'd be like, yes, let's go. And we would talk about Zen and Out of Motorcycle Maintenance until both of us had to leave because we have other pressing commitments in life and need to use the bathroom, right? Like, we would talk about it until we couldn't not talk about it anymore, because it's so inspirational, it's so exciting, and the only way that I can get better, the only way that I can develop my understanding of this idea of quality is by having somebody else challenge, agree, question, fight with me about that idea. There's a reason you don't just have one brain cell, right? It's them working together that gets ideas moving. And it's the same thing with people. It's us communicating that makes us move forward, makes us progress as a people.
It's really poignant. I'm glad that you came on this show so that I wouldn't have anything else to say.
You could still say stuff if you wouldn't stop talking about, you know.
I really like that point that you made at the end about progression and growing and growth, because I think that has a lot to do with Western ideology and that Western canon that we were talking about earlier, because it's the American dream, you know, it's the pull yourself up from your bootstraps, it's the grow into a new person and get that white picket fence and your 2.5 kids and your dog or whatever, you know, it's that.
Ah, yes.
Growing into yourself, progressing as a person to the point where humanity does come together and can understand each other. Because that's what I think the great conversation really is. It's that understanding of not just all of these amazing concepts that are chilling at the end of our fingertips, but it's also understanding the people around you, because you're not the only person. There's other people there.
Right.
Amen.
Yes, right? Yes, the individual progression. But also the societal progression, right? Like, if we look at the founding of this country, it was founded on ideas, right? There was practical problems, right? We couldn't do anything. You had no voice for yourself.
Slaves.
Slavery was after this, but essentially America was a money printing press for England, right? That was your job. That's what you were supposed to be doing.
Basically.
Right? Literally. England was putting no money into America, just taking money out as they produced things, because that's what America was, a production engine, right? So there was all these practical reasons, sure, but at the end of the day, the founding fathers were liberal arts scholars who had read people like Locke and Voltaire and all these other guys that talked about ideals of freedom and representation and liberty and all this kind of stuff, the idea of the natural law versus common law, the ridiculousness of the idea of a monarchy, right? All of these things were part of the conversation when the founding fathers founded America.
Can I read another quote from Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance?
Go for it.
So the protagonist says, "But to tear down a factory or to revolt against a government or to avoid repair of a motorcycle, because it is a system, is to attack effects rather than causes. And as long as the attack is upon effects only, no change is possible. The true system, the real system, is our present construction of systematic thought itself, rationality itself. And if a factory is torn down, but the rationality which produced it is left standing, then that rationality will simply produce another factory. If a revolution destroys a systematic government, but the systematic patterns of thought that produce that government are left intact, then those patterns will repeat themselves in the succeeding government." So that one, I feel, relates because of how you mentioned that America was a country founded on ideas. The reason America was a success is because it was built on a new way of understanding, a new system of rationality. And I hope that on this podcast, we can continue to analyze these different ways of seeing the world, even with like such things as video games or AI and stuff like that. All of those things can contribute to a changing system of rationality that will eventually change the world into a better place.
Yeah, I think that's the purpose of the Great Conversation of Ideas, right? It's to get those ideas flowing, to get people to question the things that currently exist. And by doing so, you're able to perfect, better, grow, progress those ideas into something better for everyone, right? And you can't do that in a place without conversation, without dialogue. So Stringfellow Barr talks about this idea of dialogue and discussion being a dying art form post-World War One, right? And how that is actually one of the greatest tragedies to come about in the 21st century. Not the decades of war of World War One and Two, but instead the death of dialogue. And that is the thing that we really need to try and recover, because without dialogue, there is no growth. And so the idea of the podcast, this great conversation, this new conversation, is to just contribute to the questioning, contribute to the discourse, not to try and find answers, not to try and convince anyone of anything unique or different or new, but instead to keep us in dialogue.
One of my favorite examples of this in history comes, I mean, I'm American, so naturally I've been like,
hell yeah, brother, USA, USA. Sorry,
naturally, bro. I've been like, had American history stuffed down my throat since I was born. One of my favorite examples in American history of this happening is when Benjamin Franklin was relatively young, he created an organization of intellectuals surrounding him. And they would meet weekly in sort of a club or an organization that they called the Junto. And each week they'd have some problem or idea or book that they'd meet to discuss. And it was a way of keeping everyone's mind active and focused on bettering the world around them. And especially an emphasis on the practical application, on building the world up. This podcast kind of reminds me of that. Like, we come each week with, ideally, each week, we'll see.
About.
We have something to talk about and to explore.
Yeah, there's a text, there's a topic. And I think having that greater focus of contributing to the conversation, but also the purpose of contributing to that conversation to be the betterment of the world around us, helps to steer this conversation a little bit more than it's been steered. Because I think that part of the directionality issues we've been having is that we're just grasping for ideas to talk about instead of looking at like what needs to be discussed.
Yeah, because I feel like I've even been doing that during this episode where maybe not grasping, but I'm like keep trying to really lofty things.
Not me.
And I'm grabbing these super abstract concepts that really don't affect everyday life.
Mm.
And these abstract concepts can be good to explore. But in the end, people don't always care that much until they're practically applied.
Right. How does this affect me? Right. How is this important to me? Why is your conversation relevant to my life?
Right.
I think this is probably as good a time, because we're like almost out of time, as any to talk about this. But I think the challenge needs to change, right? Like, we've had the challenge aspect and the takeaway aspect since the beginning. And I still want to keep them. But for me, the challenge moving forward, like what is my challenge to myself? I am going to be looking for things to question, right? And writing down my questions. My commonplace book is going to get some more use finally. And I'm going to start writing down my questions. And I'm going to bring my questions to this place, right? And I mean, I am not going to be a regular guest on the podcast, but with the influence I have, I hope that we'll start incorporating some of these questions that you guys have into episodes, right? But what do we think? What's the challenge for our listeners out there?
Find your question.
Right.
You know, start there.
And send it to us.
Yeah.
What do you think? Answer it.
Yeah, well, we have the Spotify Q&A section. So like we'll put a section in there where it's like, what is your question? What There's are your questions?
We have an email. You can find us on Instagram.
At the Paradigm Pod on Instagram.
Exactly.
That's true.
And email us at podcast@paradigmhigh.org,
baby.
That is correct. Those are our contact points.
I memorized all of them. Spotify Q&A, if you'd like to answer that.
Okay. So takeaway is the new conversation. Sure. We're moving in a different direction. It'll be the same hosts, but hopefully a very different vibe. And our challenge is to start looking for questions and start engaging in the great conversation of ideas. Thank you all so much.